Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kritis. Today is Monday, June 15th, 2020. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you all enjoyed your weekend. Title of today's podcast, More Funny Money, Please. Where do we even begin? But I do want to say, congratulations to everybody. Pat yourself on the back. Give yourself a round of applause. High five, hug, kiss your significant other. Do what you got to do. We've done it, ladies and gentlemen. We've crossed the threshold. We are now at $26 trillion in counting in a national debt. Phenomenal news. Phenomenal. Of course, this happened late last week. I was off Friday, but back at it today. Can't make this stuff up. There is no end in sight. Nobody talks about it. Nobody cares about it. But you will. But you will. Mark my words. Wall Street continues with its roller coaster volatility. Understand this from our volatility model, which we still, of course, monitor here. Anytime you see this type of volatility, historically speaking, of course, history does not have to repeat, but historically speaking, when you witness this type of volatility, it comes with negativity. It comes with downward pressure on asset prices, historically speaking. Now, we could truly be in the financial road of Oz, as I like to call it, and things might just continue to go onward and upward as if nothing ever happened. I mean, the markets were down big this morning, but they rallied later in the afternoon because the savior, the Federal Reserve, came out and announced that they are going to start buying individual corporate debt, corporate bonds. Now, we knew this. We knew they were going to do this. They announced this a couple of months ago. So this is no surprise. Got the markets to sort of finally take a deep breath, sort of find a bottom, if you will, to that massive sell-off a few months ago. Okay, the Fed's going to backstop everything. That was the rumor. That was the news then. Now you got the news today. Usually it's buy the rumor, sell the news. Nope. They bought the rumor back then. They're buying the news today. And of course, this is our dear leader. It's his birthday week. Thunder Thumbs, President Trump celebrated his birthday yesterday, June 14th. So this is his birthday week. There's no way stocks are allowed to go down to begin with, let alone during the birthday boy's birthday week. I can only imagine the type of phone calls and discussions that went on today with the market sell-off. Or does Jay Powell, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, is he now a good boy? Has he been trained well enough by the Trump administration and by Wall Street? Pay attention, Jay. If it's going down, come out and say something. Come out and do something. I don't know, but I would like to know. If anybody can share information on that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Was it Mnuchin? Did Mnuchin call up Jay and say, hey, come on, you got to do something here, Jay. We can't have this. Was it Kudlow? Was it Navarro? Was it Trump himself? Who was it? I want to know. Because this didn't just happen. And they have an untold number of extra facilities. All of those BS acronyms that we discussed here months ago, what we told you they were going to be rolling out, the quote-unquote emergency facilities, they got a dozen of them. So anytime the market sells off, well, the Fed just has to come out and say, okay, well, we got our checklist here. Well, we checked this one off. So next time it sells off, if it sells off, we're going to come out and announce that we're going to start this next facility. Even though we announced we were going to do it months ago, now we're really going to do it. Such a joke. Such a joke. A slap in the face to free market capitalism. It's a slap in the face to any type of functioning market. It's a slap in the face to any type of price discovery. And it happens right in our face. This is another bailout. You understand this, ladies and gentlemen. And we're going to get to the numbers momentarily. Market performance. Well, major indexes all closed up for the day. Right now in overnight futures trading, we got the Dow Jones up nearly 600 points, up 2.25%. The S&P 500 is up 1.8%. NASDAQ 100 is up 1.7%. 4%. Cash trade over in Japan skyrocketing up 900 points, a gain of 4 percentage points right now. Across the pond, a mixed bag, but mostly in the red slightly. And right now, cash trade in the land down under, Australia is also up big, almost 4%. Now, I get a lot of these headlines, like I tell you, off of TradingEconomics.com. And right now, they've added another tab called shares. So is this a signal that we are at a top of this market or getting close to it? Because now they've added a new tab for our convenience to find out what is going on with these markets. And the shares that they highlight here are Apple, Tesla, Microsoft, Amazon, Alphabet, Facebook, Alibaba, Visa, don't leave home without it, JP Morgan Chase, Intel, Johnson & Johnson, Procter & Gamble, ExxonMobil, 3M. Okay, there you go. Tesla, up 6% today. Almost $1,000 a share, making it, I do believe, by market cap, the most quote-unquote valuable auto company in the world. Not even close to anywhere near the sales of Toyota or other major names, but it is the most valued company in the auto space. Isn't that amazing? We'll see how long that lasts. On the commodity front, we have WTI trading at $36.89. A barrel Brent is at $39.50. Natural gas, $1.67. Gold, $1,730 an ounce. Silver, $17.37. And Uncle Sam's 10-year treasury note, or junk note, whatever you want to call it, is yielding 0.76%. So on this whipsaw day, get rid of them. Get rid of the junk. Let's sell them off. Now you got yields at 0.76 on the 10-year treasury note. So that's some of the market performance. Where to begin? Main focus, I guess, is on the funny money. So let me get a couple other headlines out of the way before we start talking about the corporate bonds, how it's a bailout of industry, how it's a bailout of the bondholders. Came across an interesting article today. 85% of restaurants out of business by the end of this year. This is from a restaurant group, restaurant coalition. 85%, now this is independent restaurants, out of business. So it begs the question, of the whole pie, the 100% of the pie, how many of those restaurants are independent? That was my question after reading the headline, because I didn't know the answer. Well, it's about 70 to 75% of all restaurants are independently owned. A lot of mom and pop shops, a lot of immigrants, small businesses. 85%, that's huge. Think about what that means. Now, of course, this organization, and of course all restaurants as a whole, at least most of them I would imagine, are lobbying for more money. They want more funds. Now, whether they will come out and call it bailout money, I don't know. That's what I'm going to call it because that's what it would be. But it would be more bailout money. There is a proposed bill. I believe it's about $120 billion for the restaurant industry specifically. Whether that will gain any traction is anybody's guess. So you could have this group, this restaurant coalition, maybe playing to some of the numbers, fear-mongering, get this out there to scare some more politicians into saying, my goodness, we can't have this happen. Look at all of our constituents who are restaurateurs. And, of course, understand the supply chain of how serious this could be on the downstream effects and upstream. I mean, think about it. You have farmers. You have food distributors. You have all of those trucks, all of those drivers, all of those employees. Less miles traveled because you have less trucks. That's less truck manufacturing. That's less use for mechanics. That's less tires used because they're not traveling as much. You get the picture? This has huge effects. Even if they're exaggerating, and I really don't think they are, but let's assume that they're exaggerating. Say 50%. Say it was 50% of what they're projecting goes out of business by the end of this year. That's a travesty and a tragedy in and of itself. 85%. And it's because, as we've been discussing here for months, all of this social distancing, it's the local ordinances. What are cities and locales going to do? What are they going to make their local businesses do? How are they going to make them operate? Yes, we know capacity was for 500 people, but now we got to cut it in half. How long can they survive on 50% capacity? Can't survive on takeout alone. A lot of these smaller restaurants, the whole point of them is the atmosphere that they bring to the customer, to the dining experience. That's what people want. They want that social interaction. They want that ambiance. Well, we can go, but there's only going to be half as many people. Will the restaurant survive? Mathematically, no, because their costs aren't being cut in half. You think their landlord's just going to cut rent in half because they cut capacity by 50%? That's not how it works. And that's the other thing to be very mindful of too here, ladies and gentlemen, because a lot of this quote-unquote stimulus is temporary, at least by nature, by design so far. Now, more funny money, please, and we're going to get to that. But right now, a lot of these spending bills, the Nobody Cares Act, a lot of those provisions, those will be expiring here in the near term. That extra $600 for those unemployed and collecting those benefits, that expires at the end of next month. The forbearance on student debt, that expires, I believe, at the beginning of October. The moratorium on paying rent, on paying your mortgage, that will expire in the near term. What will happen after the fact? I believe it's not going to be a pretty picture. And that's why there's more funny money coming down the pike. Even though we were told by now, those hardline Republicans who somehow found a spine, although of course they didn't, but they were trying to draw the line in the sand. We're not going to do any more bailouts. We're not going to help the states. They squandered their resources before this. They're not going to be bailed out. So did the airlines. So did major corporations. Didn't stop you for them. But now, might be a couple more trillion dollars coming down the pike. And who called that? We did, months ago. Told you this was just the tip of the iceberg. It was not going to stop there. This COVID-19, this pandemic was going to be used and is being used to justify the unjustifiable. As I wrote in my letter, representation and recourse, all the way back in March, almost 3 months ago already, talking about everything that was coming. Read it, capitalnews.com. Check it out if you haven't already. Send it to your politicians. Send it to your congressmen. Send it to your senators like I did. Sign your name. Put my name on it. Big, bold letters. Huge font. Can't miss it. Wake these people up. This is your money, by the way. You're going to be paying for this. Make no mistake about it. So that's the restaurant. Then, of course, I haven't discussed too much about this because there's been a lot of other economic news, but you have the riots continuing, which, of course, is no surprise because we've been talking about this here for months. Global protests before the pandemic. Told you it was going to come to a theater near you. Now it has. And it's going to pick up. And it's picking up globally. You have the Lebanese continuing to protest. They're burning their cities down, too. I think they actually went after the central bank. They actually understand what the problem is. They went to the source. There was a funny tweet I came across last week, and I forgot to share it with the audience. In regard to the protests, of course, in regards to the police and the death of George Floyd, but in regards to the protesters in Washington, D.C., this person tweeted out, all of these protesters, and not a single one of them knows where the Federal Reserve is. I laughed out loud because it's so true. It's so true. They want to go after the injustice, the frustration, the anger. I get it. I completely understand it. Completely understand it. But again, you got that big picture. Just have a sign. Have somebody there and say, just march this way. You're still protesting. You can do two things at once. Go down. You're right by the White House. Just hang a left. It's right there. Can't miss it. Federal Reserve. Right on Constitution. You'll find it. But nobody wants to do it, and that's like I said last week. They're paying everybody's bills. They're going to spend another $200. Jay Powell says they don't spend, they lend. Okay? So get that straight. They don't spend, they lend. All right? But if they're going to pay everybody else's bills, like I said last week, when you get a bill, check that little box that says your information changed. They're going to turn that little piece of paper over, and you can write an address down. Write the Federal Reserve's address down. Write 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue for the White House. Send it to the Capitol building to Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell. Let them pay it. They're paying everybody else's. It's your money. You wouldn't even have to work. You don't even have to work. You don't even need money anymore. If they're just going to pay your bills, do what you want. Go on vacation, charge it, you get the bill, send it to them. What do you need money for? To pay your bills. Well, they're paying it. So you don't got to go to work. You don't need money. Do what you want. Just send it to them. All right? That would be a peaceful revolution. Could you imagine if they got millions and millions of bills from everyday Americans? Can we start that? Can we actually do that? Let me hear your thoughts, please. So you got the riots, you got the protests, you got the city takeovers over in Seattle. Complete nonsense. If you didn't think that this couldn't happen in this country, I told you it could. And I told you that it would. Coming to a theater near you. All right? People are frustrated. The system's rigged. Everybody knows it. Whether they can put their finger on it and identify the root cause is another issue, clearly, because they don't even know where to protest down there. But they know, people know instinctively, intuitively, that something is wrong. And there is so much kindling, so much dry powder waiting to ignite. It doesn't take much. And that's what we're witnessing day after day, night after night. You have the continuing protests in Atlanta over the weekend because another individual was shot dead in a Wendy's parking lot in a drive-thru. And then the protesters turn into rioters and they burn down Wendy's. Because that makes sense, because Wendy's is responsible for what took place. So now all of those people who had jobs are now out of work. I mean, what point are you trying to drive home here with destroying your own cities? It doesn't make any sense. How do you think you're going to attract people to your cause? Which, especially in the case of George Floyd, is a worthy cause. Because that never should have happened. Because when you have the rhetoric that's thrown out there, including from the president, when you have him say, dominate the streets, and also law and order. Well, when you look at that video footage, ladies and gentlemen, what do you think that looks like with that knee on that man's neck? Does that look like domination, or does that look like law and order? That's why, as the president of the United States, you have to choose your words carefully because they matter. I mean, that ship has long sailed. This guy doesn't care. He's shameless. He's stupid. He doesn't know better. Pick your poison. I don't care. Does it on purpose to fan the flames? I don't know. At this juncture, it makes no difference because it's the same result. It fans the flames. It divides, it doesn't unite. And that's a job as a leader, especially in these times. And it's not his fault either. That's the killer of all of this. The man's been there for 3 years. Okay? Thunder Thumbs, President Trump. This isn't all his fault. But if you want to take all of this on your back and say you're the law and order candidate and that you're the law and order president, well then, look what's going on under your watch. Can't have it both ways. Can't play tough and then allow all of this aggression and frustration to come through, not jiving. Can't play the tough guy and then not do anything about it. So what do you want to do? But the rhetoric has got to stop. It fans the flames. He knows it. He's playing to his base. It's got to stop. There needs to be leadership. There needs to be some truth-telling. But that's not going to happen. It's not going to happen from the Republicans. It's not going to happen from the Democrats. No way, no how. It's not going to come from corporate America. It's not going to come from the Federal Reserve. They're just going to keep this charade going as long as they possibly can. Just like Jay Powell told us last week during his press conference or virtual press conference following the conclusion of the FOMC meeting. He told us to our face the importance of being able, corporations being able, to rule over their debt. That's a Ponzi scheme. We need more suckers to come in to keep the game going. We need more suckers to buy more debt to keep the game going. There's no fundamentals here, ladies and gentlemen. It's a house of cards built on a foundation of sand waiting to collapse. And the markets keep going up. The Fed begins purchases of up to $250 billion in individual corporate bonds. The Federal Reserve announced Monday it will begin buying individual corporate bonds 85 days after unveiling the purchase policy and alleviating intense credit market pressures. The program, also known as the Secondary Market Corporate Credit Facility, will take in up to $250 billion in corporate bonds from eligible issuers. And again, the Fed gets to determine who that is. The Fed can also tap $25 billion in funding assistance from the Treasury Department as set aside by the CARES Act. This is a typo, ladies and gentlemen, in this article. They said it's the CARES Act. It's the Nobody CARES Act. The central bank updated the program to, quote, create a corporate bond portfolio that is based on a broad, diversified market index of U.S. corporate bonds, end quote, according to their press release. The portfolio will complement purchases of corporate credit exchange traded funds, ETFs, through the SMCCF since May 12th. Individual bond buying will begin on Tuesday, according to a separate statement from the New York Fed. The Fed's first purchases of individual bonds arrive months after the program's March 23rd reveal, setting the bottom for risk markets. Investors flocked back to stocks and corporate debt after the announcement, heralding the facilities as a backstop for both asset classes. Too big to fail, ladies and gentlemen. Before any individual bonds were taken up by the Fed, the S&P 500 rallied out of its coronavirus slump on the policy-fueled optimism and hope for a rapid economic recovery. The central bank has taken in roughly $5.5 billion through its ETF purchases so far. Its primary market corporate credit facility, which will focus on buying debt directly from firms, is not yet operational and can take in up to $500 billion of corporate debt. So again, that's another arrow waiting in the quiver if the markets sell off again. Oh, not only are we going to go into the secondary bond market, we're going to buy them directly. So look out for that. The Fed's announcement helped stocks erase the last of their early losses. Participating issuers need to have been rated investment grade as of March 22nd to participate in the Fed's individual bond purchases, according to a term sheet. Bonds bought on the secondary market must also have remaining maturities of 5 years or less. The junk bond market is still receiving some central bank aid from its ETF purchases. You can't leave out the junk. I mean, it's all junk. The central bank also opened its Main Street lending program on Monday to lender registration. The move allows banks to sign up for offering loans to eligible small and medium-sized businesses. Of course, they expanded the definition of small and mid-sized businesses to basically exclude them because you're talking about billions of dollars in revenue, which is not a small business, and thousands of employees, which is not a small business. The Boston Fed will soon begin purchasing 95% of loans made through the Main Street program. The $600 billion facility was also revealed in late March, but has run late in starting operations due to last-minute changes, Chairman Jerome Powell said during a Wednesday press conference. It got delayed due to last-minute changes. The whole urgency was about small and mid-sized businesses, the heart and engine, the soul of this country. Oh, well, last-minute changes, dude. Can't help them. 3 months into this crap, now they're finally going to start putting the money out, and it's going to end up going to bigger companies. Make no mistake about it. Are we going to know this? Probably not, because, you know, there's no transparency, there's no accountability. Mnuchin isn't giving up any information. The SBA, the Small Business Administration, isn't giving up any information. Kudlow, Trump, they're not giving anybody any information. Government Accountability Office asked for it. Nope, you're not getting it. We knew this months ago because they said it themselves. You're not getting it. Well, they told us the truth for once. It's your money. Wouldn't you like to know where trillions of dollars are going? That $500 billion in the Nobody Cares Act that goes directly to the Treasury Department that can be used by the Federal Reserve, presumably to be levered up, typically 10 to 1. But the Federal Reserve removed the reserve requirements. So that usually places some type of limit on the amount of money expansion that banks can pyramid themselves on, that inverse pyramid. If you make the reserve requirement zero, mathematically speaking, it's infinite. They can expand the money supply as much as they want, all off of that $500 billion special purpose vehicle, because this is not in the charter of the Federal Reserve to be doing what they're doing. Right in front of your face, financial and economic coup d'etat. They're running away with the loot. What else do we have here? U.S. debt clock, $26 trillion. Now, the official U.S. federal spending is about $6.4 trillion. The unofficial, meaning the actual, when you take into those off-balance sheet items, is slightly over $7 trillion in spending thus far. We still got 3.5 months to go. Unbelievable. In this fiscal year, end of September, we bring in what, $3.2 trillion? We've already spent $7 trillion. We've borrowed and are borrowing for the second quarter alone, which we are still in for another couple of weeks, $3 trillion. You know, we did the math. What was it, a couple months ago already? A few weeks ago, whatever it was. All these Americans, unfortunately, unemployed because of this. We said, okay, well, let's just do the basic math. $3 trillion divided by the 40 million, what have you. Now, we hear over the past few days that the White House, yes, the White House, is ready to come forward with another $2 trillion, quote-unquote, stimulus package. Another $2 trillion that we don't have. Okay? That's what Peter Navarro says, the idiot who should have been fired a long time ago. $2 trillion. That's what he's for. He has the president's ear. He's convincing the president. You got Larry Kudlow out there on the Sunday morning talk shows I saw yesterday. He's all for it. He likes it. And he said $3 trillion. So I don't know if that was a slip of the tongue or $2 trillion, $3 trillion. What's the difference? What's the difference? $26 trillion, $4 trillion national deficit this year alone. It will be more. $7 trillion in spending. What the hell is another trillion? What's going to be in it? I don't know. They'll make something up. Trying to maybe incentivize companies to come back, to leave China, to come back to the United States. Oh, that's great. U.S. tax dollars are going to subsidize some of the largest corporations in the world to come back to the United States. So people are going to be paying for their own jobs. Does that make any sense for that way to work? No, it doesn't. That's not how it works. You can pay, so quote-unquote, pay for your job through your production. But to bring that production back, because $2 trillion, that's going to have to be a lot of growth to collect that back in tax revenue. You understand? A lot. And I want production to come back here. Don't get me wrong. But there are other ways to do it. And to subsidize multi-billion, and now some of these companies are trillion-dollar market caps, to incentivize them to come back here is ludicrous. It's ridiculous. And to do it with taxpayer money. They should want to be here. There should be an environment here that is already incentive enough. And at the same time, it makes sense for corporations to want to be in other countries, to be closer to some of their other foreign customers. You know, I would like to ask Mr. Navarro and Mr. Trump if they're going to kick out Toyota and Honda and BMW because they have factories and facilities here in the United States. Should we kick them out because they're not American companies? It's okay when they come here, but it's not okay when our companies go overseas. That just doesn't make any sense to me. I understand the political argument. But that's not economics. $6 trillion, because let's just go by Kudlow's number. We already got the three out there. We're going to throw another three out there. Make it six. It'll be more by the time this is done, believe me. $6 trillion divided by the 40 million Americans. Let's just make it even numbers. $6 trillion divided by 40 million. $150,000 per job. $150,000 per job. How many of these people are going to be making $150,000? Not any one of them. Not even close. The vast majority of them, not even close to $150,000. Because we know the hardest hit industries, they're service. A lot of these people make less than minimum wage because they're based off of tips. People making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year if they're lucky. And here we have a government that's going to be spending $6 trillion for 40 million people unemployed, $150,000 per job. It'll take them years to earn that on a gross basis, and to pay that back in taxes will take a lifetime. That's why you don't do this junk. It's basic mathematics. And getting back to the Fed real quick before we sign off, it is a bailout for those bondholders, because those bond prices would have been collapsing, and so those people would have been taking a big hit on the price of those bonds, because of course those companies, they could have defaulted, they could have ended up in bankruptcy, and those bondholders would have ended up with pennies on the dollar. But now, backstop, bailed out by the Fed, being subsidized by the Fed, they are going to pay a higher price than what would otherwise be the case in a market that is properly functioning. They get bailed out. Those are the bondholders directly. Indirectly, or maybe you can still argue directly, are the companies themselves getting bailed out, or at least getting some type of assistance from the secondary market, because now if they want to issue more debt, well, those bond prices are up. They got somebody willing to buy them, bid them up. Bond prices and yields are inversely related. So if there is a bid to buy them, higher price, lower yield, lower borrowing costs. And as Chairman Jerome Powell stated last week, as I stated earlier in this podcast, that's the goal. We want to allow these companies, make sure that they can continue to rule over their debt. And if you look, ladies and gentlemen, at a chart of corporate debt of non-financial corporations as a percentage of GDP, we're at an all-time high. And typically, when you look at this graph, you can clearly see the cyclicality of this. This is part of the business cycle. Okay? Peaks, troughs, all right? It peaked. But now, because of all of this perversion, it shot up once again. It should have been going south. Now it's going north. This is a huge distraction. This is a huge dichotomy between the fundamentals of this economy and what is going on in the financial world of Oz. You could see it as clear as day. The cyclicality of corporate debt as a percentage of GDP, especially when you're entering those recessions. You can see it. Peaks, starts to go down in a recession, because that's what happens in a recession. There are corrections. It's the deleveraging. It's the savings. It's the selling of assets. It's bringing in cash. Perhaps it's going through bankruptcy to restructure, to come out leaner and meaner. And if you can't, then it's liquidation. But you see that in the chart clearly. Now, keeps going up. Why not? They borrowed another $1 trillion. Because we're printing it. More funny money, please. Please, send your bills to the Federal Reserve, to the White House, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, the Treasury Department. Pick your poison. Send one to each one of those entities I just mentioned. Make a stand. I'm tired of this junk. It's your money. It's our money. Free was never so expensive. If we make it, if this banana republic can survive like this for another few years, I'll be amazed. Really will be. Our odds of surviving another 5 years like this, slim to none. Slim just left town. I'm honestly giving it 18 months. I don't know how they've kept it up to this, except that you got crackheads all over the place. And you got people rioting, and they don't know where the real problems are. You think that's by accident, or do you think that's by design? More funny money, please. Please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.